New Age Evangelicals, now on A View from the Bunker. The New Age movement shares much of its theology and most of its goals with Adolf Hitler. That sounds like an outrageous claim, but we'll discuss that and go in depth as to why that's true over the next hour. Our guest is the author of The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, a groundbreaking book published in 1983, also the author of A Planned Deception, The Staging of a New Age Messiah. She hosts My Perspective, a program on the Micro Effect Internet Radio Network, and she has her own blog at cumby.blogspot.com. Constance Cumby, it is an honor and a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
The book Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, released in 1983, published in 83. My wife, as is true in most things, is way ahead of me on things like this. She read your book just about the time it came out. I'm coming late to the party, and maybe that's why I feel so much alarm at what is happening here. And by that, I mean the convergence of the New Age movement and evangelical Christianity. Is the alarm warranted, or am I just slow to catch on to something that...
You should be feeling alarm, and it's not just happening now. It's been taking place for some time. I think, if anything, we slowed it down. Jeremy Rifkin wrote a book back in 79, called The Emerging Order, God in an Age of Scarcity. And Rifkin is a hardcore New Ager. You name it, he's into it. And he said that the new order would be introduced, that the evangelical church would be a primary tool to bring the new world order to birth, and that it would be accomplished through a change in religious paradigms, and that they would shift from a fallen dominion theory to a stewardship ethic. And it was such a blatant exercise in planned religious subversion, you would have thought that people would have caught on to it. They couldn't give him Christian book awards fast enough, and so many famous evangelical figures wrote in the book, if we don't hurry up, we're going to be miss out on being in the vanguard of this new Protestant Reformation.
And
that was back in the early 80s.
Now, having read... and sadly, I wasn't able to complete it, but I've read about 80% of The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow this week, finally.
Okay.
And so the words, I mean, the description you just gave of Rifkin's book raises red flags for me. But some of our listeners may not be aware yet of why the New Age movement poses a threat. So, in the interest of laying some foundation, what makes a belief system New Age, and why should we be concerned about it?
The New Age movement was about three overarching goals, and when you boil it down to its essence, it was about a new world order. The terminology pretty much came from them. The second major goal was a new world religion that would synthesize the world's spiritualities. Mm-hmm. And as strange as it sounds, it shifted a worship from God the Father to something they called the planetary oversoul, which they identified as Lucifer. And the third major goal in the New Age movement, they cheerfully acknowledged they were working for the reappearance of the Christ. But the Christ they did not define as Jesus. The Christ was a Maitreyan figure, somebody who would be acceptable to all the world's religions, that he was not Jesus, and Jesus had only been our avatar for the age of Pisces. But now that we were moving into the age of Aquarius, a far more important time, we needed a new Messiah for the new age. And I figured if they had the nerve to say it, I had the nerve to quote them.
What you just described, Constance, is the Book of Revelation.
Yes. Yes, and they were acted as though they were allergic to the Bible. They were very busy marginalizing folks reading the Bible literally. And basically everything the Bible said look for, they were saying quite openly, we're going to do.
it's like getting a different perspective on the same news story. You know, like the Fox News version compared to the Al Jazeera version. Not to cast this in Christian versus Muslim terms, but I mean, that's the point. It's the same story, but told from a different perspective. Is that an accurate characterization?
Yes, it is. In fact, I had the opportunity to debate Benjamin Krem on a couple occasions, three occasions. And he was not very happy with me. And he said I was going to pay miserably for interfering with the reappearance of the Christ. But on the first debate, when he was taken by surprise that he had to share radio time with me, he accused me, of course, of being a fundamentalist. And I said, why, Mr. Krem? I said, I can certainly understand your aversion to fundamentalism and your hostility to the Bible as the written word of God. I said, after all, if I were on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, I wouldn't particularly want my friends dropping by the post office. I said, but if they did come to the post office and they did view those posters, I wouldn't want them taking anything they read literally. And I said, why, everything the Bible has said, watch for. You have said tonight on this very program, we are going to do. And I started enumerating them, and he was begging for mercy. And every time he would schedule radio interviews for a long time after that, he would tell them, if Constance Cumby comes on, I'm not going to stay on the air. And there was a talk show host in Cincinnati that put him to that once, and that was an interesting one also. But, no, they were very dead serious about it. They were not expecting any opposition. One of the delusions they were operating under was they were safe from detection because only people who had their all-called initiatory experiences could understand it well enough to talk about it. And so that they were safe from detection. And, of course, just the opposite is true. It's God who dispenses wisdom.
Mm-hmm. One of the claims you make in The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, and this is one of the things that really alarmed me this week, and partly because all the evidence has been in front of me, and I think I've been awake now for probably the last 5 or 6 years, but it really didn't gel until I read your book. You make the claim very plainly that the New Age movement shares its theology and its goals with Hitler's Germany, the Nazis.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you explain why?
When I started looking at the New Age movement and looking at where they were going and what they were talking about, I was a political science major in my undergraduate years before becoming an attorney. And I was looking at some of their political action groups, such as Friends of the Earth and Earth First, and they were talking about drastic population reduction. And they needed a living space. They were talking about the new spiritualities. And the books that they were delving into and using were talking about the Aryan race, the need to preserve the Aryan race, that a new root race would emerge from the Aryan race, that they were issuing invitations. They said, if you're black, if you're African-American, if you're American Indian, if you are Oriental, you're welcome to join us, but you should be practicing celibacy, as your races are destined to die out anyway. And again, if they had the nerve to say it, I had the nerve to quote them. But when I started digging into this even further, which was when I discovered that Unity, which was a large, very powerful church in the Detroit area, was actually bringing Benjamin Krem to Detroit to make an appearance and a presentation on the reappearance of the Christ, I started delving into it deeply, and I found a book, a very fortunate find, called The Occult and the Third Reich by Jean-Michel Angerbert.
Mm-hmm.
And I've purchased the book, which is now very hard to find. And if you could have whited out everything that said Hitler, Third Reich, and put in New Age movement and released it as an up-to-date authoritative text on what the New Agers were practicing, believing, and promoting. And that has been a tool, an immense tool, for getting many decent people out of the New Age movement. Because one of the books that's sitting on my shelf, in fact, I'm staring at it right now in my office, Running God's Plan by Foster Bailey. And on pages 14 and 15, He said that one of the goals of their hierarchy was to have a unified Europe. He said, now, we tried this before, working through a disciple, using the Rhine River Valley and the inhabitants of that valley as a binding factor. He said that attempt was unsuccessful, but now another attempt, or he said that attempt by a disciple was unsuccessful, meaning one of their all-cult disciples. He said, but now another attempt is in full swing, namely the Six-Nation European Common Market. And Luce's Trust, which published that book, has tried very hard to bury it. I think you go online and look for copies now. They cost something like $150. They try to bury the evidence, but you don't have to have a doctorate in history to figure out who the disciple is who tried to unify Europe using the Rhine River Valley and the inhabitants of that valley as a binding factor. That was clearly Hitler.
Well, yes, and that's one of the things, like I said, that just sort of gelled when I read Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow this week. We've had the opportunity, Sharon and I, to interview Peter Lavenda, the author of Unholy Alliance, A History of Nazi Involvement with the Occult. And he is very clearly draws the connections between Helena Blavatsky and the theosophy, and the occult belief system of the Nazi Party. So,
Hitler kept a secret doctor at his bedside, and I was looking at photographs of Hitler's library taken up in videos. And I stared staring at it, and I recognized the chart was the same as a chart that appeared in one of the Alice Bailey books.
It's astonishing. Now, the image that came to my mind, I think for most of my life, until very recently, sadly, of the New Age movement were hippies and otherwise well-meaning people who thought that, you know, chanting or yoga or, you know, whatever would somehow let them lead happier, more stress-free lives. Do most of the people involving themselves in the New Age understand that this is what it's about?
A number of them have come out of it and have been helping to spread the word to others and to get others out. And many people have picked up on that very thankfully. I think that everybody deserves at least one kind warning on this. After that, I'm not going to beat them over the head with the evidence, but many have seen it. Many have come out. I've had support from some amazing places. I sometimes would have people come to me and tell me how bad their former instructor was at a certain place and what he was into and the things that they had witnessed. And I would take it with a little grain of salt. And then, lo and behold, a year or two later, I would receive a letter from that very person that they were talking about, saying that somebody had passed my book on to him. He had read it, and he recounted all the things that he'd been into, which were even more intense than anything I had realized. He had studied at the Arcane School in New York with the Bailey people, and he had made the pilgrimages to India, and he was thoroughly into it at an executive level. And they had came out of it. The publisher of one of the major New Age books, Earth at Omega, Passage to Planetization, Donald Keyes and Norman Cousins, who was the editor of Saturday Review, contacted me. And he wrote me a very nice letter telling me all the things that he had been into and that he had repented of it. He told Donald Keyes and Norman Cousins, I'm not going to publish you anymore. You're going to have to find a new publisher. And they did, too. It wasn't half the job, the professional job that he had done. And he destroyed his remaining stock of the book so he wouldn't be guilty of disseminating it any longer, and came to meet with me when I was speaking in Hornell, New York, and actually came on the radio. I didn't want to prematurely expose him to it, but and I was very happy to look on the Internet and look him up and see that he had kept the faith over the years, that he had stayed out of it and stayed involved in Boston's Christian community. Mm-hmm. And then one of the happiest things that ever happened to me, I was contacted by the Silva Mind Control instructor from Kansas City, Missouri. And he had taught Silva Mind Control in Kansas for many years for Jose Silva. And Jose E. Silva called him in December of 1983 to wish him Merry Christmas. And he said he had watched me on Something Beautiful, a Kansas City Christian television program, and he was very angry at what I had to say about the New Age movement. And then he said he thought maybe he should read the Bible for himself, that he really didn't know what the Bible had to say, to see what it had to say about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And he said every time he tried to read the Bible, he went to sleep. So he said that angered him because Silva was supposed to enhance his mental powers. So he went to a Christian bookstore. He picked up the Bible on tapes, and then he spotted my book, and he looked at it, and I was discussing the Hunger Project with Werner Erhard. And he said he knew Werner Erhard personally. He was a dear friend of his. And he said he bought my book just so he could go show his friends how dangerous I was. He said he took the book home. He said he could not put it down.
Mm-hmm.
He read it through. And he said he was convinced, and Jose Silva called to wish him Merry Christmas, and he said, Jose, I will not be teaching for you any longer. At his own expense, he went to a Kansas City print shop. He had a mass printing of 15,000 letters, which he sent to all 15,000 of the students he had trained, apologized for his role in their deception. It nearly cost him his marriage because his wife decided that he was a fanatic. But I spoke at a counter-cult conference in Kansas City, and I think it was 1984. And he and his wife were reconciled and were expecting a second child, and they were both Christians. So I've had so many neat things like that happen. It's made it easier to deal with some of the opposition from places where I had not expected it.
Well, we'll definitely talk about that over the next 45 minutes or so. And again, reading through your articles about the opposition to your your exposure of the links between the New Age movement and evangelical Christianity, it's... I find it amazing that it didn't sour you on Christianity as a whole. And as Christians, how do we recognize New Age theology, especially as it manifests itself in our churches?
Well, Buckminster Fuller said the problem with planet Earth, with Spaceship Earth, was it didn't come with an operator's manual. I think it did.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think there's everything in scriptures that we need to recognize it and identify it. And we have to, there was a profile given in scriptures of those who were deceived at the end times and those who were not. And the profile was never perfect truth. The profile was the love of the truth. It said, for they received not the love of the truth and they were caused to believe a lie. And people have to desperately care what that truth is and they have to desperately be searching it out. And the minute somebody tells you, don't read something, you better read it very intensely. At least God made us responsible for one book, and he did give us the scriptures. And if we don't know what's in those scriptures, we are a sitting duck for this thing.
Yeah, I had a pastor very wisely once said that it's difficult to generate any righteous anger when we don't know enough doctrine to know what we should be angry about.
And if they haven't read anything else, read Deuteronomy chapter 18, there shall not be found among you, because there is a list of forbidden spiritual practices, and those forbidden spiritual practices are the mainstay of the New Age movement. And you talked about the hippies and the chanting, and that's part of it too, but because the common denominator, nobody in their right mind would get into this thing knowingly. So it helps if you're somewhat out of your right mind. So hence we have these techniques. We have these drugs. Marilyn Ferguson, who wrote the Aquarian Conspiracy, a pro-New Age unveiling of the movement, said that LSD had given a whole generation a spiritual experience. Well, there was a sign I once saw in a downtown Detroit restaurant. It said, you don't have to be crazy to work here, but it helps. You don't have to be crazy to be in the New Age movement, but it probably helps.
Well, again, referring back to author Peter Lavenda, he also author John Marks in his book, the search for the Manchurian candidate, Lavenda, in his three-book set, which the name of which is escaping me now, sadly.
I've read Lavenda. He did some important work. I don't believe he's even a believer, but he certainly wrote very well from an expository standpoint about what was taking place, and I think he was an honest journalist.
Yeah, Sinister Forces, that's the title I'm looking for, the three-book set. Both of those men document very plainly the use of drugs by government researchers to try to open portals or open gateways between the human mind and spirit and the other side. And interestingly, he also, Lavenda did, drew the connection between what the Nazis had done and what took place following World War II, going so far as to say that he believes the United States government or elements within it literally sold its soul in order to gain the knowledge that the Nazis and had gained through their occult practices. So it doesn't surprise me to hear about Ferguson, Marilyn Ferguson, writing that LSD and other so-called mind-expanding drugs are recommended within the New Age movement in order to get in touch with other forces.
Another one that they had were hanging on to desperately and wanted to keep was ecstasy. MDMA, I believe it's called. And that was, they were desperate to keep that because they felt that that gave the people an initiatory experience.
So, beyond this sort of drive amongst the New Age to get in touch with, other spirits or powers or what have you, how are they trying to achieve their goal of this New World religion, and how are they trying to co-opt evangelical Christianity to do it?
Well, this has been a long time operation, and it's not brand new. And it would it has gone back further than I thought. Interestingly enough, the only threat I ever had to my face came from the senior editor of InterVarsity Christian Publishing, who threatened me with character assassination if I did not immediately back off the New Age movement issues. And I remember looking him in the face. He had tried to stop a television program I did for TV 38 in Chicago the night before. And I said, Jim, I said, I don't care if nobody stands with me on this one but God. And he said, so sneeringly, I will not forget it to my dying day. He said, God may be all you'll have left. I said, well, Jim, would you care for another handicap? But but interestingly enough, and this was, I honestly think that when I discovered this thing, that they thought I knew 1,000 times more than I really knew, and that the truth was 1,000 times worse than I suspected. Because now I have discovered that the founder of InterVarsity's brother, Sir Kenneth Grubb, headed British military intelligence during World War II. But more importantly, he was the founder of the World Council of Churches. And he was also co-founder of the International Institute of Strategic Studies, which is doing a lot of things to bring the New Order together from a military and global governance angle. And it's a primary think tank in Europe. And on the other side of the Atlantic, his brother was very, very close with the International Christian Leadership in Washington, D.C., and Abraham Verity, as some pronounce it, had claimed that he had received a revelation from God that we were to have a new world order.
Now, this International Christian Leadership, this is the group that eventually became what we know today as the Family?
The Family, the C Street Foundation, a number of the Family, the Christian Fellowship, the Prayer Breakfast Network. A number of names they give themselves, very rich, very powerful, very elite, and something I would have frankly never suspected when I started my work. And the way it came to my attention was very peculiar. It was 1988 when I received a telephone call that David Spangler was going to be speaking at a local Episcopalian church in Boulder, Colorado. Now, Spangler was the New Ager who distinguished himself by saying that in order to enter the New Age, we first had to take a Luciferic initiation. That was the required entry point, and those who didn't accept the New Age Christ would be released from physical embodiment and sent to another dimension other than physical incarnation where they would be happier.
That sounds like the rapture.
So or mass murder.
Or mass murder, right,
I think what their preferred scenario was mass murder. But anyway, again, if he had the nerve to say it, I had the nerve to quote him, and I had awakened many people to where he was coming from, and showing his materials to many New Agers helped deliver those New Agers from that intense deception. Well, I had a telephone call that they were from friends saying they were going to go hear David Spangler speak at the local Episcopalian church, and I kind of laughed, and I said, well, prepare to be good and bored. He's not exactly the world's most dynamic speaker. And they called me back the next day, and they said, oh, you were right about the boring part. He was really soporific, but hang on to your hat. He said something very significant. We're sending you the tapes. And I listened closely to the tapes and transcribed them, and he said the real reason he was there was not to participate in to speak at the Episcopalian church. That had been added almost as an afterthought. The real reason he was there was to participate in the latest of a series of ongoing high-level meetings between evangelicals and New Age leaders, and that the last such meeting had taken place at Hollyhock Farms in British Columbia, and this one was at the Gold Lake Ranch Conference Center there at Boulder. And the director of Findhorn Foundation, which was another very, very important component of the New Age movement, said how wonderful it was to sing We Are One in the Spirit with His Separated Christian Brethren, be one in the spirit with them. And they said somebody was there from Spiritual Counterfeits Project. They'd helped write this book, The New Age Rage. And the theme of that book was the same as the theme of the conference. There could be unity and reconciliation with the New Agers. Well, I tried to get information on it immediately. And it turns out they'd all taken a vow of silence. Now, fortunately, the New Agers had not kept their vows.
Hmm.
And that helped us get to the bottom of it eventually. But there was a massive cover-up in the Christian world on it. And it was not until July of 1988, almost 10 months later, that I had that I learned that the event had been supposedly, and I say supposedly because at the time I bought it, the story that the evangelicals were putting out was that Doug Coe in Washington, D.C., the head of Fellowship Foundation, had organized the event because he had children involved in the New Age movement, allegedly, and there needed to be better understanding between New Age leaders and Christian parents. Now, I found out that the truth was that it was Paul Temple and his children, the founder of the International Institute of Noetic Sciences,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, is mentioned very, very prominently in Dan Brown's new novel.
Surprise.
Yes. And Paul Temple was the co-founder of that, and the CEO of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And here he had been since the earliest days with Abraham Variety, been part of the inside core group of it in Washington, D.C., Fellowship Foundation. And the far and away the biggest checks that he was writing from his philanthropic group were to the International Foundation in Washington, D.C., about $140,000 a year. And after tallying up what he gave over an 8-year span, I suddenly knew why I had taken as much opposition as I had from some of the sources that I had. And they represented dollar signs. And that wasn't the only source of problems. There also were Christians compromising with Reverend Moon, who said he was the Lord of the Second Advent.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Where's our trust in God? If God does not need 25 cents worth of occult money to build his kingdom.
And yet you had guys like Reverend Jerry Falwell and Tim LaHaye who were accepting help, financial and otherwise, from Reverend Sun Mary Moon.
Big time. Tim LaHaye and I unfortunately had an out-and-out fight about this. His nickel in 1980, January 1986. And remember I told him, I said that he said it was okay to take Reverend Unification Church money to build the kingdom of God on earth, and I said, God doesn't need 25 cents worth of Reverend Moon's
mm-hmm.
money.
Now, until I read your book and started reading your articles about this convergence of New Age mysticism and evangelical Christianity, frankly, I had never heard of David Spangler. For those who aren't familiar with Spangler or, say, Barbara Marx Hubbard, who are they? What is their significance in the New Age movement?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, they're both major players. Let's start with Barbara Marx Hubbard. She is the daughter of Lewis Marx, who was the founder of Marx Toy Company, which were big items when I was a little kid. She was an heiress to a substantial fortune. Her, interestingly enough, her sister Patricia is married to Daniel Ellsberg, the Pentagon Papers.
I interviewed him a couple of years ago, yeah. Okay. Did not know that. Yeah.
Well, his wife is Barbara Marx Hubbard's sister. Hmm. Patricia Ellsberg is Barbara Marx Hubbard's sister, and they are very close. And that's interesting in and of itself, especially when you look at some of the Watergate things that came down.
Mm-hmm.
I just viewed the movie on Chuck Colson, and it was produced, the movie was produced and put together by the very same Paul Temple. And, of course, it was the Ellsberg scandal that resulted in Chuck Colson's incarceration. And here, Barbara Marx Hubbard, one of her very closest friends, is Paul Temple, who was the master of ceremonies at her Soviet American Dialogues,
mm-hmm.
who had her speak out of the Christianity and the New Age, and had her co-chair the event with Doug Coe that took place in Boulder, Colorado. And Paul Temple gives very large sums of money to her, and they are exceedingly close. In fact, she joked at I owe a couple more segments on that. And frankly, the facts were just so overwhelming. I thought it might destroy everybody's faith if some of this gets out there, and I don't want that to happen either.
Mm-hmm.
But Barbara Marx Hubbard spoke at one of Paul Temple's conferences, and they were laughing about their accomplishments on this. And she said, when they were at Goldbeck, she said, some of those old pastors that were there were very resistant to them. But then as they sat in the hot tubs and got to know one another, the resistance diminished and they became very close friends. And she said, that's the key to breaking through on this, personal experiences with these people.
Hot tubs. Okay. Well, experience seems to have a lot to do with the New Age. It's all about experiential faith rather than doctrinal faith as revealed through the Word of God.
Religion, you can taste, touch, smell, and quantify and empirically verify. And yes, they're pretty good at manufacturing that.
Now, how is that manifesting itself? I guess let me step back for just a second. How is the influence of players, money men, if you will, like Paul Temple, through New Age gurus like Barbara Marx Hubbard and David Spangler, manifesting in evangelical circles through its influence or their influence on prominent evangelicals like Doug Coe?
Well, there was a, first of all, do you recall the scandals, the real estate scandals on Mark Hatfield in the early 1980s? He was supposed to be a Christian senator, and there was a real estate scandal, which they convened a Senate ethics panel.
Senator Hatfield was from Arkansas, is that correct?
No, Mark Hatfield was from Oregon. He had been the governor of Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And then he was the United States Senator from Oregon. I think he may be still living.
Okay.
I haven't heard of his death at any rate, so he's probably still living, but elderly now. But he was a very prominent speaker. In fact, he had one of the best New Age voting records in Congress. But he was supposed to be an evangelical Christian, and that Billy Graham had urged Nixon to make him his vice president, and how unfortunate it was that that had not taken place. Well, there was a major scandal, and I had lots of opposition from Mark Hatfield, and I didn't quite know why originally. After I read his book, I started to suspect why, but I didn't know all the pieces until fairly recently. And Paul Temple was his benefactor, and had given him the properties at favorable prices, which he had turned around and disposed of at very huge profits, three times their dollar value.
Okay.
And that's why the Senate Ethics Committee was convened. But Mark Hatfield had called my publisher and threatened with them with a lawsuit if the book mentioned Mark Hatfield in any way, and my publisher said, well, you can't be a public figure and not be a public figure. My publisher was also a Louisiana state senator.
Mm-hmm.
But that those pressures were being placed, I really didn't understand until I saw all the dollar inputs, which probably I never would have discovered had it not been for the Internet.
Mm.
And poking around, I was... It was fortuitous how I found this. I recalled that Chuck Colson had had experiences with Doug Coe, and I don't have any opinions on Chuck Colson yet one way or the other to know where specifically he's coming from on this. But I was emptying our dehumidifiers downstairs in the basement, and there was a stack of books that had gone to entropy as much as the basement had where I used to do my research before resuming the practice of law. And I carried Born Again upstairs, and in the back I saw that whenever he needed a place to retreat, Paul Temple would loan him his vacation home in Spain. Well, I was heavily focused on research about people who were involved in the European Union who came from Spain, and I wondered if perhaps there was an acquaintance there. And the answer on that is probably yes, because Paul Temple had been the president of Standard Oil in Spain. But anyway, I had just pulled the I took the book upstairs and absentmindedly, just casually Googled Paul Temple and Doug Coe together, and I was dumbfounded to come up with page after page of some of my own material on the Internet that somebody else had posted. They hadn't asked my permission, but that's fine. I usually take the attitude of go forth and multiply. And they're... And they had something that I had never seen before, which was the actual invitation to the Gold Lake event. And it was signed by Paul Temple's daughter and son-in-law. And they said, we have asked two of our very dear friends, Doug Coe and Barbara Marks Hubbard, to co-chair this event. And it was called Bridging Through Christ. And then I Googled Paul Temple some more, and then I was absolutely astounded to find that he was the head of the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And basically, he signed Willis Harmon's paychecks, and he was an oil billionaire,
mm-hmm.
and that astounded me. And then I kept looking at his holdings and what he had, because he was so terribly prominent. According to the Billy Graham archives, he was part of the very inner core group of the Fellowship Foundation in Washington, D.C., and that there were several files and boxes of files dedicated to things from him, and that he'd been part of the core group from its earliest days. And then I, of course, I kept poking, and I found this Shambhala gold mines and a number of occult ventures that he was involved with, including the Temple of Understanding in New York City.
Hmm.
And then one day I was just Googling absentmindedly, and I came up with Three Swallows Foundation, which is Paul Temple's philanthropic group. And I looked at it, and I had the usual. There were large sums of money going to the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and there was large sums of money going to some of Barbara Marks Hubbard's operation. Campus Crusade for Christ was getting $19,000 or $20,000. Arthur Blessed Ministries even got a little bit at him in my travels also. And then, but far and away, the biggest item on the list was International Foundation, Washington, D.C. And I didn't know what it was, and so I clicked on the link that was on the article, and the link took you to some little foundation in Oklahoma called International Foundation. And there was about a three-page 990 report, handwritten, and their budget was about $500 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And the checks going to this one were like $140,000. And I looked at that, and I thought, that can't possibly be it. So I did some more digging on the Internet. It wasn't easy. And I'm thinking that was a deliberate obfuscation to put the other group down. And I dug back, and I finally found the actual 990 reports for the Three Swallows Foundation. And I went through page after page after page, and I came up with the International Foundation in Washington, D.C., and a C Street address. And I Googled part of that street address, and bingo, it was Doug Coe's address.
And, of course, C Street became very well known this summer with the Governor Mark Sanford affair, literally, from South Carolina, when he mentioned C Street as a place where he was going for counseling.
It's very interesting, but there was a very interesting agenda on that group from the very beginning, I'm afraid. I would like to think that it was people that honestly were getting together for prayer, and for those who did come to know the Lord through that route, I rejoice. However, I know New Agers who came to Christ reading the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ, and they got, and that's not designed to lead New Agers to Christ. It's designed to lead Christians away from Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But they got so curious about Jesus, they went and read the original source books. So, I mean, the devil's had many a dirty little trick backfire on him, and that was could have well been the case with some people there. Hopefully that is the case. But what was so interesting on this one was that right from the beginning, there was a group of 12 who met in Washington, D.C. at a home that they called themselves the 12.
Uh-huh.
And they had seminars every New Year's Day, and there was a man called Frank Laubach was one of them, and Stanley, they called themselves the 12, Norman Grubb, the founder of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, was the biographer, and he records all this in his book, Modern Viking. Mm-hmm. But there were 12 of them, and when I examined them, almost all 12 of them were known to me for heavy-duty mysticism. And Frank Laubach, who was known for Each One, Teach One on the reading,
mm-hmm.
had also been very deeply involved in occult matters. Most of the names on the 12 were, but one day I'm looking at a book that I bought right at the beginning for my research by a very gossiping mm-hmm. wager. It's called Nirvana Now by Roland Gammon. And if he didn't write about that he was in on these meetings too with the 12. He was talking about his fellow world servers. And, I mean, this man was not borderline New Age. He was into the thing on an aggressive basis worldwide. And here he was in on these Washington, D.C. seminars with the others. So I'm very fearful that what was really taking place was not so much let's lead everybody to Jesus, but it was probably let's see how we can use the church, or as Alice Bailey said, swing the masses into step. They and that I had opposition that came from those sources was tremendously disturbing to me when I started, because I thought the whole thing would be very simple. Christian versus lion.
Mm-hmm.
Good versus evil, black versus white, and it wasn't that simple. A lot of people I perceived as us were either them or supporting them or had been compromised by them.
Yeah, a lot of the sheep in the pews had suspiciously sharp teeth.
Yes, your grandma, grandma, what big teeth you have!
Yeah,
and many people who were in the New Age movement, lots of them sincerely did repent and come out. But then, what's interesting about this too is that some of the same names that I looked at then, I'm looking at now. And just the other day, somebody pointed out to me an article on the World Council of Churches that was appeared in 1961. It was called New Age of Syncretism. The New Age of, and it was in Time, an article in Time magazine. I've now preserved my computer. And it was a 1961 article about the World Council of Churches and what they were doing. It was not Christianity, not Jesus, but dialogue between all the world's religions. And I really have to think that they were working both sides of the Atlantic with intention. One of the New Age groups I discovered when I started my work was People's Temple, Jim Jones. And, of course, after that scandal had occurred in 1977, as I recall it, the New Agers couldn't give Jim Jones to us fast enough. And they were all kinds of things, and they said, good grief, if we don't shut these fundamentalists down, we're going to have lots more Jonestowns. Well, when I got into serious research and collected some of my New Age directories, I found out that Jim Jones People Temple was considered a key New Age center, along with Lucis Trust, the Theosophical Society, Reverend Moon, the various Swamis, Werner Erhard, and he was an important New Age center. And I took a lot of flack for saying that. I was interviewed one day on a Detroit radio station, and the talk show host said on the air that he had had Jim Jones's adopted daughter had been a guest on the program, and he quoted what I had said because it had been the source of so much controversy, because I gave Jim Jones back to the New Agers. And he said, and she blurted out on the air, she said, if that's what Constance Cumby said, she's the only one out there telling it the way it really is. That's exactly what he was involved with. And I knew about that, but I was in California speaking, San Jose, and a woman was in the, we had very large crowds and a very busy question and answer line. And a woman got up and attempted to answer a question, and I was so weary I just shut the line down, and I said, I just can't go any further tonight. So she was first in line the next night when we were there, and she got up and she said, in your book you said that People's Temple, Jim Jones, was part of the New Age movement. What is your documentation for this? And I gave her my documentation, and then just to bolster my case, I told about the radio interview that I'd had in Detroit and what had been said about Jim Jones's daughter. And the woman in line, whose name was Bonnie Malamud, she said, that was me. I was that woman. I made that statement. And I actually ended up spending some time with Jim Jones's adopted daughter. We had dinner with her and her husband and her biological parents. Jim Jones had made many ministers in his church surrender children to him for his rainbow family. And that was, confirmations often come from where I least expected it, and so did opposition, but some of the opposition did hurt. One of them was Walter Martin had been especially hard on me.
Christian Research Institute, yeah.
Yes, and he, and I had admired him greatly, and it hurt so much when I had reported that when he was asked about my work on a radio station, and I had virtually, I'd sacrificed everything to do this. And they asked him what he had to say about me, and he said, a ripoff and an alarmist. And I remember I was just in tears that particular night. And one of the things he criticized me for the most roundly was for saying that People's Temple, Jim Jones, was part of the New Age movement. And for a long time, there was no New Age movement. I had made the whole thing up, and I used to say, well, I wish I had, then I could make it all go away. Well, and I remember at one point, John Warwick Montgomery, who was a friend of his, twice in a row gave me the Legal Loon of the Month Award on his radio program. You need a sense of humor to survive it. I said, well, if I get it a third time, do I get to keep the trophy? Where I was going with this was just before Walter, I was in Seattle in 1989. I had been invited out to do a debate against the New Ager, which took place. And driving up there, we found a book called The New Age Cult. It was by Walter Martin. And But in the book, he said that he was the only person who had ever brought out the occult connections of Jim Jones, and he was the first and only person that had ever done this. And that's what I had taken some of the most persecution from him for saying. And I remember I was struggling. I was literally struggling for my spiritual life that weekend. It was hard. And then the owner of the bookstore looked through that book, and he said, why, this is your work. And I said, I know. he said, well, Bethany Fellowship wouldn't like this. You should write them a letter. And as I was leaving Seattle, I was paged at the airport and told that Walter Martin had died suddenly of a heart attack. Well, I was going to write a newsletter about the whole thing, but I don't believe in kicking corpses, especially when there's grieving family.
Mm.
So, but the corpse continued to kick me for quite some time.
Mm.
But by the grace of God, I'm still here and I'm still kicking.
Well, and I appreciate you taking out time from your day, because we're getting towards 10 o'clock in the evening. It's been a long day for you. And I will put in the show notes for this podcast the links to your excellent series, The Family and Its Hijacking of Evangelicalism. It's clear that powerful and wealthy men like Reverend Sun Myung Moon and Sun Myung Moon. I worked with Koreans enough in my life. I should be able to pronounce that. But guys, even deeper behind the scenes, like Paul Temple, have financed prominent and powerful evangelical groups like the Family or the Washington Fellowship, whatever name they choose to go under for tax purposes, as well as financing these New Age groups like the Institute of Noetic Sciences. That's, in a big way, their political arm towards achieving the New World Order. How are we seeing, in the last few minutes, Constance, how are we seeing the influence of New Age thought and theology showing up in practices and teachings in our churches?
Well, it's taking many forms. When I first came on board, it was a shift towards centering and global structures, and that now is happening again. There was a period of time when they kind of went into hiding, but now they're out there very boldly, and it's taking forms such as emerging church and various occult practices and labyrinth walks. And then the environmental movement is a big, big entry point. And basically where the New Agers are headed with that thing is earth worship.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the Christians have been co-opted into helping set up the structures that for global governance that are designed to repress us. Basically, we've been tricked, put in a trick bag into building our own Trojan horse.
And we see Rick Warren signing on as an advisor to Tony Blair's Ecumenical Faith Foundation.
Tony Blair was the keynote speaker for the Fellowship Foundation, Abraham Variety, Doug Coe's group in Washington, D.C., this February 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it, and he supposedly he had become a Catholic, but he was busy telling the Pope that the Pope needed to spiritually evolve his views on homosexuality.
Right. And Tony Blair was also a keynote speaker at the annual training session for pastors held at Bill Hybels' big church, Willowbrook, northwest of Chicago.
Cheering.
Yeah.
Charming, yeah.
We're also seeing practices like, Rick Warren promoting the, what do they call it, breathing prayers or breath prayers?
Yes, and those breathing prayers, centering prayers, these are altered state techniques. Also, there is a branch of it in the Pentecostal world that was called the Manifest Sons of God.
Right.
And
right.
Basically, people they would sing the same song over and over and over,
mm-hmm.
and over and over and over and over until they'd finally float into a trance, and they would come out with this latest move of the Holy Spirit that we were gods ourselves and we were going to be the generation that would abolish death.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were going to make war on those who didn't accept this latest move of the Holy Spirit, and since judgment began at the house of the Lord, guess who they were coming against first? The
mm-hmm.
fundamentalist evangelical Christians who didn't accept this latest move of the Holy Spirit.
Joel's Army movement, yeah.
Yeah.
It is frightening, because when you step back and take a look, Constance, you see that the goals of those experiential Christians, and I use Christians in air quotes there, on the one hand, and the New Age movement on the other side, who, if anything, at least they see what is taking place. You know, they're not they see what's going on. At least the leaders in the movement do. And they're all working toward the same goal.
I really think this whole thing boils down to who loves God and is trying to please Him. And those who love God or have the love of the truth get their eyes opened. The others don't, and the hypocrites and the Pharisees get left where they always were. And it's the love of the truth that is it. Everybody deserves one kind warning. And after that, I don't beat them over the head with the evidence, but I certainly do pray for them.
And you have certainly presented the evidence at your, basically at your blog, cumby.blogspot.com. In the right-hand column there, you've got links to presentations you've done that have been videotaped and posted to YouTube, documentary evidence posted along with your article series on the family and its hijacking of evangelicalism. And even your
book. They even pulled down both my books for free. I did that after I discovered the New Agers were posting theirs up there, so I fight fire with fire.
And in fact, after we interviewed Jeff Charlotte about his book, The Family, and made reference to your work in the sort of the afterword, and the fact that you had made them available very graciously at no charge to download, we had several people email and ask for that link. So, and I will recommend The Hidden Danger of the Rainbow.
Very good.
As you know, and again, coming late to the party, having finally read it after 25 years, again, credit to my wife for kind of nudging me gently and saying, you really need to try to get in touch with Constance Cumby, especially with the work that she's been doing lately. So,
it's been scary. I was hoping that when I wrote that book that it would might go away and that it would that I had overstated the case, but I didn't. I understated the case, and what's scary to me now is that that book is probably more current than when I wrote it.
I certainly found it so. And again, I'll put a link to that where listeners can download Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow and A Planned Deception, the Staging of a New Age Messiah, again, at no charge. And Constance, very gracious of you to make those available at no charge after all that the grief that you've taken and the work that you put into in order to put those books together.
Well, with what Jesus Christ did for us, it's the least I can do.
Amen and amen. Constance Cumby, again, the books are The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow and A Planned Deception, The Staging of a New Age Messiah. Her blog, where she updates us with news into what's happening in the world and how it fits into the, what I believe is the end game, and her research into how the New Age movement is influencing not just the world political scene, but also what passes for evangelical Christianity in the United States these days, is at cumby.blogspot.com. And the links to all of these and her articles at newswithviews.com will be posted in the show notes at pidradio.com. Constance, again, it's been an hour that has gone by very quickly, a educational and fascinating, and I know we've only scratched the surface, so I look forward to, God willing, the opportunity to talk with you further.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Constance Cumby's blog is cumby.blogspot.com. I'll put a link to that in the show notes, and as you look in the links in the right-hand column of her blog, you'll find a link to a number of free resources, among which, of course, is the excellent and groundbreaking book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are welcome all the time. You can send them to us by email at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. That's radio@peeringintodarkness.com. And if you visit the website, pidradio.com, look in the right-hand column. You'll find all kinds of links to where you can find us elsewhere on the web, Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, Shelfari, and a number of other online sources. We love to hear from you, and we appreciate, most of all, the exchange of ideas that takes place between you, Sharon, and me, and of course, Sam the Dachshund. Next week, we'll talk to Dr. Paul Williams, an American citizen who's been sued for libel in Canada and is being forced to defend himself according to Canadian law. Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert. Thank you for listening. This is A View from the Bunker.